Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Joyce from Akinwa with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with Susan Ponder Stansel, the CEO of Alivia Care, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Home Care Homebase. The challenge to attract, hire, and retain top talent has never been tougher. That's why now more than ever, you need Home Care Homebase on your side. Our industry-leading software is known, used, and loved by thousands of home-based care nurses and clinicians who want quick, convenient software to complete documentation at their patient's bedside, not at home on their own time. Experienced clinicians on the job hunt are now asking for us by name. So if you're looking for the best people out there, visit hchb.com today and learn more. I recently got to chat with Susan about her company, Alivia Care. The company is somewhat new to the home health space, but is already making moves to ensure success in the risk-based environment. During our conversation, we also got into the company's work in the PACE sector, growth plans, and more. Hello, everyone. Today, we're joined by Susan Ponder Stansel, the CEO of Alivia Care. Hi, Susan. Thanks for joining us. Where are you joining us from today?
St. Augustine, Florida.
Nice. So to start, I wanted to give our readers a sense of your organization. Alivia Care is what we at Home Healthcare News like to call a post-acute care one-stop shop. For listeners who don't know, can you provide some background on your company, including your 2021 entrance into the home health space?
Yes, I'd be glad to do that. Alivia Care was actually founded in 2020, and it was based on community hospice and palliative care, which started its life as Hospice of Northeast Florida back in 1978. And the company that grew from 1978 is actually one of the largest independent for-profit hospices in the United States and one of the oldest as well. And what had happened over the time is, of course, end-of-life care and our understanding of the components of it have really evolved. We were adding other lines of service, but just sort of putting them under the hospice umbrella and hospice governance and organizational structure. And we realized that to really get the full benefit of those lines of service that deal with people with serious and advancing illness and really be able to meet their needs and the needs of those who pay for the services and refer patients to us, that we needed to have a platform that would support those lines independently and give them each the resources and the oversight that they needed, hospice to continue to grow. And of course, the other services that we identified that we did not have in our portfolio to be able to add those. And that's really how we came to understand that we needed to get into the home care business. Years ago, I didn't think we did. But as I'm seeing more of a blurring line, which is a good thing, a continuum of care, we recognized that we needed to. And always in these situations, we asked ourselves, do we build it, do we buy it, or do we partner for it? And for home care, we wanted to buy an existing agency that had a very high star rating and also had those who could really help us get up to speed on delivering this service, understanding that it is very different than hospice in terms of payment structure, all of that. So that's how in 2021, we found Better Life, did the acquisition. And actually, it's a year ago this very month that we acquired Better Life and got into the Medicare certified home care business.
And can you remind our listeners about what your footprint is, where you operate?
Yes, we're in North Florida. I think the number now is 32 counties total, but we go from the East Coast adjoining the Georgia border all the way over to the West Coast of Florida and then into a big swath of southern Southeast Georgia.
So as you mentioned, Alivia Care, you know, had a presence in hospice, had a presence in palliative care, and, you know, home health was what was new for the company. Yes. You did touch a bit on this on your first answer, but I wanted to see if you wanted to say more on why did you think home health would go well with your other care services?
I'd be glad to elaborate on that. Home health is something that, again, aligned very much with the notion that people wanted to receive care outside of institutional settings, which is basically what the hospice model is and the PACE model, which I know we'll talk about later. And so it fit very well into our portfolio. But one of the main reasons that I wanted to get into that business is because we had been focused for many years on how to more effectively provide care for those with serious and advancing illness who did not want to elect the hospice benefit or who really needed care before they were medically eligible for the hospice benefit. And, you know, this is something the industry's been discussing a lot. There's really not a defined palliative care benefit at this point and a defined mechanism of payment for that. And a lot of home care patients do need a different kind of care than, you know, restorative. So home health to us seemed to not only fill that need to be able to provide all aspects of post-acute care, but it also was a good vehicle to begin to deliver palliative and serious illness care in sort of preparation for what we see as the new world where you are supposed to have that continuum of services to support people as they move through their advancing illness. So home care was the best fit we could find. And it's a very needed service. We do see the value from a restorative standpoint, but then we also wanted to be able to use the components of home health that weren't necessarily focused on restoration, but on preventing or mitigating further decline.
Can you talk about some of the things that Alivia Care has been able to accomplish since adding home health services to your service line?
Well, one of the things that the company accomplished is to be able to understand, you know, how to support that service, what the financial mechanisms work, all that foundational understanding that's going to be needed for us to not only expand the footprint of that line of service, but to deliver high quality care. One of the other things that we've accomplished during this first year is really being able to focus on those intersections between what home health is doing and what hospice is doing, so that then that gives us our focal point for specialty programs that we want to develop or the types of patients that we really want to seek referrals from. And that was something, again, in coming into this business, we definitely wanted the traditional patients who were coming out of the hospital who needed wound care and orthopedic care and that sort of thing. But then we thought that being in the business would give us that opportunity to look at those who need a different kind of care and wouldn't necessarily be able to get that through traditional home health or through hospice.
Yeah, and I think that nicely leads into my next question. Susan, I know one thing that me and you have talked about in the past is how Alivia Care wants to offer home health services that are, to quote, a major differentiator when it comes to health outcomes. Can you talk about what exactly this means at your company?
Well, what we're focusing on for the future is understanding that eventually our healthcare system, particularly Medicare, which is the biggest purchaser of health services in the country, is moving away from volume to value. And we really wanted to be able to look at specific patient populations and what they needed that was different than the core components of service. So I'll give you an example. Patients who are coming out of the hospital with, you know, needing cardiac services, cardiac rehab services. One of the things that we know from working with those patients on the hospice side as they're at the end of their congestive heart failure is that depression is a common comorbidity, that caregiver stress because the trajectory of that illness is not as predictable as advanced cancer. That stress for caregivers can be very difficult. And so we wanted to build those learnings that came from our hospice experience into the service that we deliver for specific patient populations. So those with advanced pulmonary disease, those with neurological disease, even those who are just have advancing geriatric frailty, because we believe very much that as we are looking either at value-based purchasing in home care or being a good partner to payers who are at risk for the total cost of care, including outcomes, that we needed to be able to deliver specific outcomes for specific patient populations. So that was what we meant by, you know, really finding something that would differentiate. Another thing that we are building into our service offering is that real focus on person-centered care and the use of the interdisciplinary care team, because we do believe that those kinds of practices and processes and core components are going to help home care succeed at value-based purchasing. And again, we'll also prepare home care to be able to deliver the kinds of outcomes and the kind of care that partners who may want to work with us on total risk would need from us.
And does Alivia Care have any growth plans for the home health service lines, whether that's through M&A or otherwise?
Yes, we do. We of course want to scale the existing company that we bought. And then we also want to expand into our core hospice service area, which is actually the East Coast of Florida. And we're looking now again, we asked the question, build, buy, or partner. We have one acquisition target that we are looking at, but we never rule out going de novo if the acquisition is not a good fit for us. And you know, you learn some lessons with that as you're doing due diligence about culture and, you know, whether you are better off to start sort of from scratch. And then we also want to move into the non-certified space, as Florida has that term, which would be a home care agency without Medicare certification. And I believe the industry calls that more of personal care or private duty care. Because again, we know that a lot of people want to remain in place in the community as their illness advances or their geriatric frailty advances. And we see a real demand and need and opportunity for high quality personal care and that's non-skilled services. So we want to add those two service lines in both of our existing geographic footprints, scale the one we have on the West Coast, acquire or de novo a Medicare certified on the East Coast. And then we are looking at our Georgia footprint and whether there would be opportunity there. Georgia regulates home care much differently than Florida. So part of the question always then is there an opportunity? And if so, is it something we would partner versus build or buy? So we are looking at all of those things.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit and touch on something that's kind of already come up in our conversation. So I alluded to this earlier, but I had the pleasure of speaking with you at Home Healthcare News' Capital and Strategy Conference. So during our conversation, we spoke about how your biggest strategic goal for Alivia Care was moving into the risk-based environment. Can you talk about the things you're doing to move closer to this goal?
Yes. And hospice, of course, has been a service that, you know, from the very beginning of Medicare payment back in 1983, was at risk financially and operationally for the terminal illness, everything related to that. So we had some experience with how to manage risk in a specific environment and for a specific period of time. But one of the things that we're doing to move into that risk-based environment, whether we are the direct risk taker or whether we're partnering with someone who is taking risk, is to really then fill out those other components of service other than hospice. So one of the examples I'll give is, you know, the PACE program, which are for those that have geriatric frailty. And a lot of special needs plans and other types of payers who are completely at risk like to utilize PACE because it enables their enrollees to have a good quality of life, primary care, that sort of thing. Another area that we are involved in is working with one of the REACH ACOs to care just for their specific high need, high risk population that is at the end of life and has advancing illness, but is not medically ready for hospice yet. And then if I had to just round this up to the 50,000 foot level, what I would say is we're really focusing on being prepared to work with those that are taking risk, but perhaps don't have all the components of operations or services that would be necessary to succeed at it. One of the examples I'll give is that there are many primary care practices that are very successful at global capitation, taking full risk for those covered lives in their practice. But where some of the challenges come up are those after hours and needing to be able to respond in the home on call when someone is having an issue or exacerbation of their illness that may lead them to either call 911 or show up at the hospital. And that's not something that most of those who are in this risk space necessarily had prior to getting in or really are satisfied with the way they're doing it. And that's something that hospice has been doing. You know, we've been doing it for 40 years. So we're really focusing on where we can add value with what we know about how to manage risk, specifically the after hours thing, example that I gave you, and then really preparing to position ourselves as a great partner to work on those things that are troubling to those at complete risk, like readmissions, after hours, unnecessary hospital and acute care utilization, all those things that we believe we can bring some value to partner. So at this point, the only place we're taking risk directly is through the PACE program. We are partnering with another organization that's doing the oncology bundle to deliver their palliative care. And we did take upside and downside risk with them because we believed in the outcomes we could deliver. And then we're working with some of these primary care practices and reach ACOs for those high need, high risk populations.
So I wanted to ask you, what would you say that Alivia Care has in place to succeed in a risk-based environment? How do you hold yourself accountable, in other words?
Yeah, and I will say this at the outset, Joyce. You have to not lose your nerve and your courage when you move into risk-based, because if you knew how to do it perfectly the first time, you would have been doing it for a very long time. So you have to be committed to the learning curve and some of the financial learning curve as well. With that said, I mentioned already the experience we have in hospice with being able to manage risk and manage patients in a way that brings good outcomes and prevents adverse outcomes. Several of the components that we're really focusing on in the non-hospice space, though, is that interdisciplinary team that is referred to in, for instance, the Medicare hospice benefit carve-in under the VBID for year 3 that's coming out, and in some of the other best practice that you see with these high-need, high-risk patients. The interdisciplinary care team really should be managing risk and looking at utilization and developing care plans. And what we found in some of the other components of service, like home health, is that's not necessarily part of the culture or the experience. So bringing that into the practice and really using the care plan as a way to both manage utilization and focus on outcomes is one way that we're doing it. There are two other components, though, that are really important. One is to have really good access to data, Medicare claims data, things like that, that let you stratify your risk and know what you're getting into and what kind of patients are in your population. Then the second thing that's related is predictive instruments, whether they're old school paper or whether they're algorithms that can help you through AI understand who's at risk for readmission, you know, what kind of utilization you might expect from a particular patient, again, to aid you in making sure you're being proactive and that your care plan really acknowledges the needs of these people. And I think, just a side note, I think there's so many amazing products coming out now in that AI space, because there is a growing demand among all types of providers for things that will help them predict need and get ahead of need and really do a better job of being proactive versus reactive. So I think everyone's looking ahead at value, but the tools that are coming out will just continue to provide greater opportunity for providers to do a better job at this part of it.
So staying on this topic of risk, of value, how is your company preparing for this nationwide expansion of the home health value-based purchasing model, especially as a company that's a bit newer to the home health side of things?
Yeah, well, lots of consulting expertise is one of the first honest answer. And what we're focusing on there, Joyce, is to really be able to accurately understand the intersection between your clinical pathways, which are very important because, as I understand value-based care in home health, reducing variability with care is an important way that you do achieve your outcomes. So you want best practice to be what every one of your clinicians is working from. And then making sure that your documentation, including your care plan and your progress notes, really do accurately reflect what you're doing and how it aligns with those clinical pathways so that when you're being benchmarked against others in the country or in your group, actually, you'll be able to really deliver the same results or very similar results. And then also doing that education with staff about how to use these tools, because that's not been what home health had been doing. PDGM was a little bit of a migration, but this is something that I've heard experts in this industry, which I am not, say is a very large disruptor and will really challenge some existing home care agencies because it is so different in terms of reimbursement, care delivery, and even the oversight and insight that needs to come at a management level to succeed at this. So that's what we're doing, hiring lots of help to guide us. And then again, using the great tools that are out there to make sure our care and our documentation really tell the story of what's being done and deliver those outcomes.
One thing that me and you have talked about in the past, a term that you're fond of using, is going beyond the meat and potatoes of home health. What does that currently look like at Alivia Care?
Well, and I want to make sure everyone understands, you know, we need our meat and potatoes. We like the meat and potatoes part of it because that's really the backbone of home health care. And it's such an important thing to be able to help people be restored to health or functionality or continue in their homes. So I'm grateful. And we had to learn the meat and potatoes. So I don't mean that to be at all a pejorative comment. But then what we're focusing on is, okay, beyond being able to deliver excellent home care that, you know, in the volumes that are traditionally seen from hospital discharge, what are the other things that we're seeing a need for? So two of the areas that we're focusing on for care-specific programs that I mentioned earlier are the cardiac care, where we're bringing in more of those social work supports and the recognition that there are some issues that are not necessarily physical about the body, but have some other components that may lead to poorer outcomes, that may lead to readmission that doesn't need to happen. And that's a program, I think, when you look at the volume coming out of our hospitals, at least, cardiac rehab is a huge need and a care-focused program that really does deliver very good outcomes. So that's one. And then the second one is the palliative care that I mentioned. And that would be patients who are coming out of the hospital, or receiving curative chemotherapy, perhaps, but are starting to get much poorer outcomes and are starting to have a lot of side effects and impacts from it that maybe require them to go back into the hospital, to really develop that transition plan and that warm handoff. Because what we saw, prior to getting into home health is that the home health didn't necessarily recognize that maybe this patient was really at the end of life, or even if they did recognize it, they felt that they could still continued to do everything hospice could do. So many times we would get these patients after they'd been admitted to the hospital in an emergency, and because their care at home really wasn't, you know, fully what they needed. And then they would be with us for 24 hours, 72 hours, that sort of thing. So what we're focusing on is developing that palliative care program, which will really help our home health clinicians recognize when it may be time to, you know, allow that goals of care discussion to happen. And conversely, there are many times our hospice staff see patients who are medically eligible for hospice and would really benefit from it, but they aren't ready for whatever reason to elect that benefit. And a lot of times it is because they just don't want to sign that form that says, I'm not going to be cured and I'm not going to take any more curative care. And we find that if we don't take them under care in hospice, many times, again, they're sort of wandering on their own out there because they may not qualify for any other type of care, and they go to the emergency room and have a bad outcome. So our thought was, again, if they have medical needs at the time we're seeing them for hospice that would qualify them for home care, then at least we could follow them and help them find that transition versus them just hoping that they find it on their own. So we really saw the palliative care as a great link and something, again, that's going to be very important in the value-based arena, because that a lot of times these folks were getting what has been described as low-value care, which is acute care that doesn't really meet their needs and may, in fact, actually make their situation worse. So that's where we're focusing those first two, the cardiac and the palliative.
So our readers and our listeners know that one topic that we've really dove into at Home Healthcare News is PACE. I worked on a broad 2020 outlook on the sector. Your organization does some work with PACE. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, I love the PACE program. It's been referred to nationally as the gold standard of elder care, and I would say it is absolutely that program. It's very impactful. And for those who may not be familiar with the model, the closest thing I could compare it to is a special needs plan, where the PACE program basically becomes the health insurer. You receive a capitated payment based on the acuity of the patient and the care plan that you've created. And then you are responsible for everything from eyeglasses to dental care to organ transplants to you name it. And the way that PACE delivers good outcomes for those who meet the criteria, and that would be older adults who medically qualify for nursing home placement, but prefer instead to age in place in the community. The way that that happens is that PACE really uses three components of care: a day center, where the participants come in and varies how many days they come in depending on their needs. So you create an individual care plan. Some may come in one time a week. Others may come all 5 days, where they receive occupational therapy, recreational therapy, nourishing meals, that sort of thing. And then at your day center, you have a primary care clinic. And to me, that's the beauty of PACE, is that it's based around a primary care model, which is where a lot of the value-based models that are coming out of CMS and CMMI are really focusing. And the having them come into the day center and having the clinic there allows you to really notice small changes that may end up becoming an emergency room admission. So for instance, if you have a person who's cognitively very sharp or very outgoing, and then they're coming in and they seem a little confused or they just don't feel like talking, that may be a urinary tract infection. And if you don't catch that early, the person can end up being admitted to the hospital with a very serious infection. So the primary care component really allows you to provide that care, and rehab, physical therapy, all of that can be provided there. And then home care services, which can include things like housekeeping and errand running and actual, you know, bathing, nurse visits, all that sort of thing. And then everything in between. So one of the benefits of PACE is that you really, as the PACE organization, doctor's appointments outside of PACE, if they need a specialist consult or those ancillary services, transportation, everything. And that does two things. Number one, it really allows, again, that comprehensive person-centered care that does deliver good outcomes from a cost and a quality standpoint. But one thing I love about it is that it relieves the caregiver, because many times we presume these older adults are living independently in the community and their kids are worried about them, which is true. But what we have found is a significant portion of PACE participants have a caregiver who's trying to balance working and then worried about what's happening to mom or dad. And it's such a relief to them to be able to know that their loved one is getting excellent care and they can still continue to work, because the literature tells us that caregiving is one of the reasons that many older adults end up in poverty, because they have to drop out of the workforce. They don't get their Social Security earnings because they felt the need to quit their job to take care of their loved one. And PACE really helps mitigate that to a large extent. So it's a great program, but you are completely at risk for both the outcomes and for the payment. And we wanted to go into PACE not only to bring it to our community, because it didn't exist north of Orlando before we brought it up here, but also to just really get a feel for what being at global risk would look like with a defined program. So that's a long answer, but that was that. You could tell I'm very passionate about PACE, and I wish there were more opportunities to expand it both in Florida and nationwide.
No, thank you for getting into that. I know that a lot of our listeners out there are interested always in learning more about PACE. So staying on that topic, what should post-acute care providers that are considering forming a joint venture with a PACE program, as your organization has, what should they know?
Well, the first thing I would say is that if you're considering a joint venture, there are probably a couple of reasons you might be doing it. One is access to capital, because typically with PACE programs, you do have to make a capital investment, and then you have to be able to really cover the operational losses that happen in those early years, generally, of the program as you're ramping up your enrollment, because scale is very important with PACE, and it takes time to get to scale. And so some organizations may not have the financial reserves to be able to do that and would need a partner who could help them with access to capital, or could, you know, be a majority partner to cover those investments that would be needed. The other reason you might do a JV is to get access to skills or expertise, or even you know, the population that's appropriate to PACE that you don't have within your own organization. So an example I'll give you with our particular decision with PACE is we didn't need the partnership for the capital, but we wanted to work with what a lot of people know as a Council on Aging social service organization that delivers the Older Americans Act services in the community, the home and community-based services, because we knew they had done nursing home diversion before. We knew that this was a population they worked with over the years to deliver Meals on Wheels and those homebound services. And we thought that their expertise, their knowledge of the community and older adults, and just the fact that they're taking care of basically the potential PACE enrollees, would bring a component that we did not have. And then we had the strength as a medical provider with all the healthcare systems in place and things like that, that a social service organization wouldn't necessarily have. So we're the majority partner. And then the Council on Aging that we partnered with is the minority partner. But together, we sort of covered all the bases that were necessary. We didn't, as I mentioned, we didn't need to do the joint venture, but I thought it would make our PACE program stronger to not have that learning curve and just bring in folks who knew how to take care of this population over a very long period of time and in the community.
So we have reached the end of our conversation, but I wanted to finish by asking you, Susan, as CEO, What's your focus for the rest of 2022?
Well, I could give you a list of 100 things, but I will say that what we talked about earlier, we're continuing to work on those expansion plans and figuring out if we're building it, if we're buying it, or we're partnering for it, scaling our PACE program. And then for me personally, one of the things that I've been given a great opportunity to do is to really work on advocacy for expanding palliative care, which I think is such an important component of our healthcare system, to really get better payment for it, better access for it, better definition for it. I'm spending a lot of time on that in 2022. And then being able, again, to advocate for expansion of PACE in Florida. That's something I'm passionate about. And there are a lot of our legislators who also have come to know PACE and see it as a real opportunity in Florida. So I'm very hopeful that we can look at expansion of access to PACE. And we'll be working on that for 2022 in preparation for our 2023 legislative session here.
Well, that is it for my questions today. But Susan, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, I enjoyed it very much, Joyce. Thank you for the conversation.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com.